We have two readings this morning. The first is by David White, the author of numerous books of poetry and prose. He grew up in England under the influence of his Irish mother and his Yorkshire father, and now makes his living in the Pacific Northwest. He holds a degree in marine biology, works in the field of organizational development, and continues to explore life through the vision of his poetry.
No one but me by the fire, my hands burning red in the palms, while the night wind carries everything away outside. All this petty worry, while the great cloak of the sky grows dark and intense round every living thing. What is precious inside us does not care to be known by the mind in ways that diminish its presence. What we strive for in perfection is not what turns us into the lit angel we desire. What disturbs and then nourishes has everything we need. What we hate in ourselves is what we cannot know in ourselves, but what is true to the pattern does not need to be explained. Inside everyone is a great shout of joy waiting to be born, even with the summer so far off. I feel it grown in me now and ready to arrive in the world. All those years listening to those who had nothing to say. All those years forgetting how everything has its own voice to make itself heard. All those years forgetting how easily you can belong to everything simply by listening. And the slow difficulty of remembering how everything is born from an opposite and miraculous otherness. Silence and winter has led me to that otherness, so let this winter of listening be enough for the new life I must call my own.
And the second reading this morning is by Elizabeth Harper Neild. She has been an English professor at A&M University, a business professor at the University of Houston, and is now a consultant and researcher. She has written numerous books, including the one that this quote refers to, Tough Transitions, Navigating Your Way Through Difficult Times.
How about a little Mozart with that cup of tea? How does music help getting through tough times? I'm sure we could read all sorts of sophisticated explanations, but I settle for something quite simple. This is something I learned from one of my early music teachers, that when you press down on a key on a piano, you think you are hearing one note, but you are really hearing the key you have pressed plus all of its overtones. These overtones, higher and higher sounds on the piano that you hear in the at the same time you press the key down, produce the note you hear, just as all the colors in the spectrum produce the white color you are seeing when you look at a cloud. And what was so amazing that I remember it to this day was my teacher's assertion that the overtones of a note in music are mathematical, that they occur in specific ratios, that they always occur in the same progression, and that they never change because they are part of the physical universe. What the ancients called the music of the spheres is related to these set-in-nature harmonics. So, in my amateur understanding of why I feel better after I listen to Barber's Adagio for Strings, is that I have heard order. I've heard the natural harmonics of notes and overtones. I've heard sound which conforms to a progression of ratios set in the universe. And somehow, in listening to this music, I am returned to balance, to internal order, to a sense of more harmony in my own life. Music also helps me when I'm spent during times of tough transitions, by taking me out of my verbal, rational world into a creative, symbolic experience. Beethoven once said that music is the mediator between the life of the spirit and the life of the senses. So here I am trying to figure out how to get my aged parents to pick up meals at the community senior center. And I sit down to listen to Beethoven's Ninth. I am transported to another realm of experience. The music lifts my spirits. I am in this moment cavorting with my imagination, my intuition, my wordless self.
Here's something to take you back. Anyone remember TV's Mr. Peabody's Improbable History in his Wayback Machine? Anybody else grow up being a fan? All right. The Rocky and Bullwinkle Show was an essential part for me of Saturdays growing up when I was a kid. In case you are a bit rusty about this important piece of history, the Wayback Machine was constructed by Mr. Peabody, a professorial bow-tie-wearing dog, as a birthday gift for Sherman. Now, recall that Sherman, fringed-haired, wearing studious dark glasses, was Mr. Peabody's pet boy. And also recall that Mr. Peabody invented the Wayback Machine so he and Sherman could visit famous historical events, and by extension, to be a history lesson for those of us kids growing up in the 50s and 60s. At the request of Mr. Peabody, Sherman set the Wayback Machine to. Sherman would set the Wayback controls to a time and a place of historical significance. And by walking through a door in the Wayback Machine, the two would be transported instantly there. And as Wikipedia points out, the machine apparently later returned Mr. Peabody and Sherman to the present, although the return trip was never part of the show. So I invite you to step back into the Wayback Machine with me. The date, July 14th, 1863. It's a Sunday, and we're in Dublin, Ireland. There is a buzz about town because a highly anticipated event is happening today. The St. Stephen's Green Unitarian Church is opening for their first worship service today. In the years leading up to this date, a wealthy ship owner and member of the Strand Street Unitarian Congregation bequeathed over £2,000 toward the building of this new church. His father had been George Washington's aide in the American War of Independence and later was USA's first consul in Dublin. When the total of £5,000 was raised, a beautiful Gothic-style building was erected, and today we are visiting for the first time. This building is a credit to its architect, William Lynn, and people already are claiming that it is amongst the best of our modern structures. The Unitarian Church in St. Stephen's Green, a delightful building of Gothic style, has been justly described as the best example extant of a modern Gothic church on a narrow street frontage, the treatment being quite original and altogether admirable. But maybe why Gothic, you might ask. In this, the mid-19th century, in Europe, there is a spiritual revival in both Catholicism and Protestantism, creating an interest in both Gothic revival and Greek revival styles of building. Part of this spiritual revival is a reaction to 300 years of obeying a set book of classical rules about buildings. Years from now, an architect and member of the Unitarian congregation will write that Darwinism played a large part in the swing to this Gothic style. Churches are desiring to meet the challenge of science, and this has led to a desire to return to a style that was seen as uncorrupted by modern civilization. Gothic art and architecture are seen as the expression of the church, not as it had been secularized, but having the true faith with its emotional appeal and air of mystery. Attendees to this new nonconformist Unitarian church noticed several features that set it apart from churches of other established denominations in its lack of communion table or altar. Some are heard to exclaim how everyone in the St. Stephen's Green Church can hear and see the preacher, emphasizing the importance of the spoken word to the Unitarian congregation. So with that, let's come back to today and my reason for this bit of time travel. My husband Joe and I had the good fortune to travel to Ireland last fall in celebration of our 40th wedding anniversary. And I took the opportunity to attend the Dublin Unitarian Church one Sunday. Traveling is a wonderful experience because it expands our way of looking at the world, shifting us outside of our normal focus, and at the same time for me, because it places me outside of my comfort zone, which is indeed fertile soil for growth. And you might find this to be true for you as well as you travel. When I travel, especially to another country, I am aware that cultures differ, customs differ, and traditions differ, and I remind myself of the respect due to cultures and people that I don't understand. I am a guest there to learn about them, and by extension, I'm learning things about myself as well. For me, feeling like a guest also meant that I felt like an outsider, at least in part. As I walked up the stone steps of this 150-year-old church that rainy September Sunday morning last year, I wondered how it might feel similar to and different from this congregation and this building, my home. That Sunday, encountering no greeter or offer of a temporary name badge, I took my seat in the wooden pews and looked around. The front wall holds a huge stained glass window showcasing the revival of the Irish stained glass industry in the early 20th century. This window, which features the themes of discovery, truth, inspiration, love, and work, contains the image of Jesus with the backdrop of a rising sun. Below this window are in six carved arches, the words of Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount, starting with these familiar words, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." To the side of this window is an elevated stone pulpit carved with the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 7, "Grace and truth come by Jesus Christ." Other traditional stained glass windows filled another wall. As I was waiting for the beginning of the service, I felt a little bit uncomfortable, a little alienated, for all the reasons I just mentioned. Although we spoke the same language, I was a foreigner, a guest, And despite reminding myself of the deep roots of Unitarianism in Christianity and my knowledge that European Unitarian churches are closer to those Christian roots than many here in America, I just didn't feel like I was in a UU church, my UU church, in other words. And just as the service was about to start, I was handed our gray hymnal, the same one that you held earlier. Yeah, this feels a little bit like home, I thought. Okay. Then after an opening prayer, the hymn was announced and the sounds of the organ filled the church. I turned to hymn number 298, Wake Now My Senses, and as the congregation started to sing, I started to cry. And I cried my way through the first verse, through the second verse, through the third verse, through the fourth verse, and I didn't stop until the very last strains of the fifth verse. Something magical, even mystical, was happening as that congregation sang, and I was crying too much to sing. My alienation evaporated like mist with the arrival of a warm sun. These are the words I eventually came up with to describe this experience that morning in Dublin. There's no demarcation, no me versus them, no dividing line between those who hold onto Christian leanings versus those who find secular leanings a better fit, versus those whose Christian heritage continues to resound in their hearts, and all the other ways of being a UU. Through my tears, though, all I could feel was, those divisions don't make any sense. These are my people. This group of Unitarians in Dublin, Ireland, singing together in this beautiful 19th century church on the west side of St. Stephen's Green, are a part of who I am just as much as those folks in Columbus, Ohio are. My tears told me I was home, home to people who love me, as well as people who challenge me, just home. I recall the sermon that I preached here last February when I talked about attending the retreat in Boston put on by the UUA for ministers who were in their first year of ministry. I talked about how I always wanted roots that extended beyond being American because for me that melting pot had worked a little too well. I came from a family that never talked about where our ancestors had come from. Working on that sermon, I made the decision that I could claim those early Unitarians and Universalists as my personal roots, that I could draw on the principles that guided their lives as they claimed their own thoughtful convictions in religious matters. I could discover in their lives passions that could inspire mine. That intellectual decision I made last year was helpful, but that experience of crying through Wake Now My Senses took me to a much deeper place altogether, a place where I and we are connected to others across time, across space, across how we interpret the mystery of life. And maybe you too have been caught off guard by your tears or uneasiness, swept away by a force coming from deep within you when you didn't expect it to happen. Where has it taken you? What have you learned as a result of pondering on what you were called to? Or maybe a better way to express that is to say, what places have you allowed yourself to be taken to? I recall a similar experience 18 or 19 years ago, and I was sitting in this church right back there on a Sunday morning, my very first visit. I felt like an outsider then, too, unsure of why I was here. What was I doing in a church? I thought I had left all of that behind. Nonetheless, I remember tearing up, listening to the spirit of life, especially the words, roots hold me close, wings set me free. And then it happened the next week. And the next week. I couldn't make any sense out of it, but I knew I had to keep coming back to this place to see what that enigmatic call was about. I was filled with an inexpressible longing, both in my first few visits here at this church and also in the Irish church as well, a longing for something I didn't have words for. And so the inexpressible longing expressed itself in the only way it seemed it could in me, in tears. This rather backdoor approach is reflected in David White's poem in his prayerful words, "What is precious inside us does not care to be known by the mind in ways that diminish its presence." As I see it, what holds a deeper value and worth is at times too leery to step forward in the face of the rational, where there is insufficient space and respect for it. In some ways, I have, for too long, tended to value the intellectual while creating some distance from the emotional. Yeah, maybe some of you too. What is deeper does have its own voice, and perhaps we must approach it as a gift, as a guest, rather, one who is open to different cultures and different ways of seeing the world. I lived the poet's words all those years, forgetting how easily you can belong to everything simply by listening. When I realized that I was putting up barriers around Unitarian Universalism by defining it by my terms, when in fact the faith is much larger than my version of it, I only had to listen, to stop thinking and judging and simply listen. The strength of what it means to be UU is that we do come from many different traditions, many ways of looking at what is ultimate in life and how to relate to that ultimacy. And our variety can only enrich us if we will listen to each other and look for similarities. Creating barriers is never the answer, I learned. If you've hung around here much, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, "We don't have to think alike to love alike." Just as in the children's story, the bellmaker's attempt to melt iron, gold, brass, and silver were doomed to fail when he could only see the differences of the metals. It was his daughter, with the help of the magician, who helped him to see that it was the similarities that really counted. And that is also true of what it takes to be Unitarian Universalist. It is the elements that unite us that make us strong, while we are made weaker when we let what differs among us define us. I was thinking about this line between what unites us and what divides us recently when I thought about an experience I had some time ago in the intensive care unit of Mount Carmel West Hospital, where I am privileged to be one of its chaplains. I had been called by a nurse to visit a patient who was on a ventilator or a breathing machine. And generally speaking, folks on vents are on pain medication. But because pain meds can reduce a patient's alertness level, and this patient was going to be tested soon to see if she could come off the vent and breathe on her own, she was being taken off those pain medications. As I stood beside her, I looked down on a pretty uncomfortable patient. And I, too, felt uncomfortable there, but, of course, in vastly different ways. Now, as a chaplain, I am with lots of folks in the hospital on ventilators, many people in the process of getting better, many people in that we hope they're getting better, but as yet we don't quite know place. And I am also with many people who are taken off the vent and die soon afterwards. And as you probably know, chaplains work very closely with nurses. Overwhelmingly, the nurses I have met are open to when a family member or a chaplain wants to talk to them about a patient's comfort level. I stand with deep respect of good nurses, their dedication, their skills, and their level of compassion. But in this case, I knew the nurse couldn't do anything to make this patient more comfortable at this time. My discomfort level stemmed in part from seeing differences. I felt myself breathing comfortably and freely, and yet I saw someone with the ventilator's tube down her throat, and I knew she wasn't very comfortable. Along with this, all the technology in an ICU room has a way of distancing the healthier person from the patient. Yet when I looked past the machinery and looked into her eyes, I just saw a suffering, scared person who wanted to be pain-free, just as I value being pain-free. I began to relate to her through our similarities. I began stroking her hair and assuring her that she would get through this, that the pain would eventually end. And eventually, I became more comfortable because I got past worrying that I wasn't able to do anything to relieve her pain and just relax and just related to her as she was. And by, she did relax a bit. Accepting our similarities meant that I had to loosen my ideas of how things should be so that I could stand with her, not caught in helplessness. The Celtic knot on the cover of your order of service speaks of that interconnectedness as I see it. Although the original meaning of these ancient Celtic symbols are only conjecture, as no written meaning has ever been found, I see the symbolism of the interlocking of separate strands knit together to form a whole that is better because of its union. And now I want to get back to that power of music, which I clearly felt and responded to during my first visits here and in Ireland. What is music? I asked myself. On its most basic level, it's a series of sounds with space in between. Well, yeah, but it's so much more. For me, there is a mystery about music and its ability to evoke deep places. I've been thinking about the power of music to heal us, reduce stress, and to lessen anxiety. And of course, to open up us to unconscious places. When I came to this church for the first time, something in me knew that I needed to stay here for that I had much to learn, many ways to grow, and it was through music that I felt its call. In the second reading, Elizabeth Harper Neild speaks of the transformation possible as music takes her out of her verbal, rational world into creative, symbolic experience. Although I can't say I understand the mathematical explanation of her piano teacher, I wholeheartedly feel the power of music to transport me to places I couldn't plan. I heard a TED talk recently by Benjamin Zander, the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra and a guest conductor throughout the world. Now, if you don't know what TED is, it's a nonprofit that recognizes the power of ideas to change attitudes, lives, and ultimately the world. Either Google it or ask a friend to Google it for you. Before this quote that I'm about to read, the conductor talked about playing a piece by Chopin, or as he pronounced the composer's name, Chopin, to a group of young people, asking them to think of a person they loved who had died. This is what Mr. Zander had to say about the power of music to transform. I was in Ireland during the Troubles 10 years ago, and I was working with some Catholic and Protestant kids on conflict resolution. And I did this, playing the Chopin piece, a risky thing to do because they were street kids. And one of them came to me the next morning and said, "You know, I've never listened to classical music in my life, but when you played that chopping piece..." But then he went on to say, "My brother was shot last year, and I didn't cry for him. But last night when you played that piece, he was the one I was thinking about. I just felt this tear streaming down my face. And you know, it felt really good to cry for my brother." I think this would be a difficult piece to follow, and because it speaks for itself. My prayer for myself and for you all is that you may be open to how the Spirit moves through you throughout the mysteries of life. And music is a wonderful mystery of life. Amen.